This is the Everybody's Talking at Once podcast for May 26th, 2020. Welcome to the Everybody's Talking at Once podcast. My name is Drew Messenger Michaels. I'm glad you're here, and there is someone here with me who you are aware of, but who you have not met, dear listener, unless you know me in real life, in which case you probably have. This is someone you've heard a lot about. This is actor, singer, activist, organizer, and person I am super married to, Lauren Villegas.
Hello.
Hello. Were you about to take a sip of coffee? Is that did I say
maybe?
That's fine. You can do that.
Okay.
That's fine. All right. We are testing two things. So one thing is there's no guest this week, as you may have noticed.
I'm not a guest.
Well, no, you live here.
Ouch.
You live here.
Okay.
You live here in the sense that we're recording in our house, but also in podcast land. You're a permanent resident. No, you'd rather be Sahara than Kabuki. If you don't know what the hell we're talking about, we're here to talk about Animal Crossing, like the rest of the internet. But I do think we have a couple of angles that we haven't seen explored quite the way we want to. So you know, this is not just clickbait. We're going to have a useful discussion that synthesizes some of the ideas I've been talking about with guests in the last few episodes. But a few people's schedules had to shuffle around. So rather than having a guest this week, we're going to bring you the people who I can't name yet because I don't know the order, but who you're going to be excited to hear from later. And this week, Lauren and I are going to talk about Animal Crossing New Horizons and why it has taken over the world, we think, and what it means about all kinds of stuff. Is that a fair summation of
yes.
what you feel like you're doing here?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What else do you have to say for yourself?
That your podcast is really cool, and it's kind of weird that I haven't been on it until
now.
It
is actually really weird.
Because you've been doing it for how long now?
Since 2013-ish?
Yeah, that's
I would
crazy.
Need to check that.
Yeah.
Yeah. The blog's been around for 10 years, like officially.
Crazy.
But the podcast has been a little less time than that. You would not know from the number of episodes that we've been around since for that long, because you know, usually, you know, folks get to 100 in a year or two, right? Because people, you know, but this was not a weekly or even a bi-weekly as it currently is podcast for a long time. This was like
when you got to
when I got someone really cool to say yes. Now we get that a lot more, so
dang
so
it.
Cool. Well, I'm glad you're finally here. We talked about having you on a bunch of other times, like we were gonna have a Game of Thrones episode and a bunch of things. Didn't quite happen, but this is gonna happen.
I also get really excited. You've done a lot of recently talking to like labor organizers and stuff, and that is always very exciting for me. So sometimes I'm like in the room when you're doing those interviews, and I'm like, and I'm like pangolin hands. And
well, you help me edit and make the show notes for those episodes. Sometimes the Emma Kinema episode, you had some good,
yeah.
You had some good prep notes and things like that. I don't know that we're gonna get too much of that in Animal Crossing context, but we can try.
No.
I know, but you're saying you've been like you've always you're being a supportive spouse and saying that you like the podcast, but you're saying that we've been it's been cool lately that we've not just been talking to game developers, but people
right.
in the world of games trying to make the world of games
right.
better.
Well, and like my world of, you know, being in live entertainment and that industry is not completely unrelated to
no.
video games as, you know, their own form of entertainment.
Well, there's literal overlap for one thing, because a bunch of actors, you know,
right.
voice act in games,
totally.
But also you mean like the way things come to be, the way stuff gets made.
Yeah. Well, and like in that episode with when you were talking to Emma, like a lot of the issues of like people do it because they love it, like that's the same
totally.
Bullshit. Yeah,
totally. Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Like, people they do it because of the passion, not because of the pay. And it's
right.
like, well, I don't pay my rent in passion, so
right. I mean, hopefully, most people. I mean, I know this isn't the case, but the idea would be that most people like what they do. That doesn't mean you shouldn't get paid for it.
Right. Exactly.
Right. Yeah. So absolutely. Okay. So let's talk about Animal Crossing New Horizons. This is not my first Animal Crossing game. I played New Leaf. I didn't get as into it as I did into this one, but I did play it a lot. You have not really played an Animal Crossing game before
nope,
at all.
Never.
You weren't even really aware of what the series was.
No,
right?
Not really. No.
Yeah.
So my gaming life is, I think, pretty generally typical of femme type people of my age, people assigned female at birth around my age and my mid-30s.
We're old millennials.
We're old millennials.
For context, yeah.
Yeah, elder millennials. In that growing up, video games were not marketed directly to me. And generally, I saw video games as being my brother's thing. I have an older brother, and like he had an NES and an SNES, and they were his toys. And like that was not my realm. Even though I was actually like very much a tomboy kind of little girl.
You defied gender stuff as far as like being a kid, you know, and the way you acted in the world in other ways.
Right.
But that games were, yeah. I mean, like,
yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's fine. Yeah, because like I was more athletic than he was. He had like crazy asthma, which is another thing. But like he couldn't really play a whole lot of sports because of that. And my dad was a big sports guy. So I was very much like daddy's little girl, sports girl. And so there were some video games that I would get into. Like we played like NBA Jams. And I was like, oh, like this is a game I understand because it's a game I understand in real life. We had the Power Pad and we did the like track games and stuff. And like for those, like it wasn't as fun for him to play by himself. So those games I got to play, like any game that had a two-player situation.
That track and field game where you actually like ran on
Pad. It was
like,
so funny.
Way before DDR.
Right. And, right. Yeah. And you figured out that like actually running was never fast enough. So you like did this weird little thing where you just like barely picked up your feet and like stamped them over and over again.
Yeah. Totally.
So yeah, my video game childhood was relatively limited, but very much present. Like it was very much a part of
You weren't into them. It's that you never had like a console that was yours
the N64.
Right.
When that came out, my brother was starting to like sort of age out of being as interested in that kind of stuff. He like had bought his first electric guitar at that point and like was moving on to cool teenager things. And
now games aren't gendered and rock and roll is dead. So, you know.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so everything's different now.
So that came out in what, like 96? I think we were like fourth, fifth grade.
Something like that.
Yeah. Because I remember saving up my money and my mom being shocked that I was going to spend it on that and not an American Girl doll. She was like, you saved that much money for what? And I was like, well, there's a new video game system coming out and like this one's going to be mine. Like I'm finally going to have my own. And she kind of like didn't get it.
Didn't know why you cared. Didn't know.
Yeah. And so like that was the first time I ever played a Mario game, really. Like where the save was my save.
It's wild to think about for me.
Yeah, right? Like that's my first.
You had it an NES and an SNES in the house.
In the house.
You never played Mario.
No, correct.
Really?
Yeah. So Mario 64 was kind of my first Mario game, which is weird.
It's crazy.
And like because I hadn't played a lot of them as extensively, like I was the kind of player that like needed the magazine open the whole time to tell me where to get things. Like it was like the star is here and like I was like, oh okay, cool. Like I needed a guide. Like I didn't like wandering around. So I like generally was like, okay, like I don't like the like general open world type stuff. Like I need a clear goal. Like
even way later when we were together, I think it was like Zelda Twilight Princess,
yeah,
whichever
totally.
Zelda was new when we were
right.
in college.
And I was like, this is boring.
What is with all the wandering? Why are you looking in these little nooks and crannies?
Yeah,
this is not fun.
Give me
a linear goal, right?
Right. I have to know where I'm going and what I'm supposed to do. If I wanted to wander around, I'd go for a walk outside.
Right. And if you wanted to plant flowers, you could just plant flowers.
You know what?
And yet, here this is what I'm saying. This is what makes Animal Crossing interesting. Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and like, so N64 was my like sort of gateway drug. And then I kind of, again, like tapered off as I got to be an adult person. And you were obviously in my life for my entire adult life. We've known each other for a very long time.
We have at that. Yes.
And so like, I'm very much a like video game fan, even if I'm not a video game player. And it wasn't until just this year that I have my first own system since the N64, which is that we got me a Switch Lite, which is really nice. And I love it very much. And we got it because like, I had never wanted to play a game as much as I did with Fire Emblem.
Yeah. So we played through Fire Emblem Three Houses together.
Twice.
Twice. And then we were traveling We knew this was before the DLC came out. We were aware the DLC was gonna come out. Yeah. So we were just like messing around with it. And you wanted to play through it again, and I was like maybe not as down for like a third playthrough.
Yeah. And just before that we were playing Pokemon, the new Pokemon.
True, yes.
And that was one of the first times that I actually would take the controller and like do some of the battles.
That's true. And I just want to be clear for the people at home. This is not because I was a tyrant.
Being
your big brother saying, no. I said a bunch of times, like, do you?
Yeah. Well, and there are games we'd play co-op before.
Straight up together. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
We do a lot of co-op. But like if we're playing like a long form action.
Yeah.
When we play Yakuza, I do the battles.
Or Persona. Those are just fun animes.
Right. I think of those as our playthroughs, but I'm the one doing what people might think of as the gameplay.
Right. I don't touch the controller. It's just watching a cool anime for me. Playing Pokemon, I was like, no, like this is battle I can handle because it's turn-based. Like I don't do real time. Like real time's hard for me.
But you never had your own Game Boy or Game Boy Advance or whatever, so you had never gotten into Pokemon either.
Right.
There's something about the Switch that's gotten you into all these big long form game genres.
So it started with Pokemon that I was like, oh, I don't have to be afraid of touching the controller when it's not just co-op, like when we play Yoshi's Woolly World, or we're like, you know, like
totally.
Even like Smash Brothers, when I can just like button mash, right?
When we're a vicious team and you can just be Wigglypuff and sleep
and make everybody fall asleep, and then let you swoop in and kill them all.
I mean, it's a good two person con.
It's a nice little hustle we've got. The fact that like that was the first time I was like, oh, like this is a game I can play without it being us playing at the same time. And then Fire Emblem, I was like, oh, wait, like this is a battle system that I understand because it's also very turn-based. And I loved the characters so much and I loved the world of it. And
the first, our shared playthrough, you fell in love with the characters, but you didn't really like what I would start managing inventory or stats or whatever. And you would sort of tune out.
Right.
But you started getting interested in that as we played it more.
Because I started realizing how much it like influenced where the characters were going in their own little
You started
worlds.
To realize something that I've tried to convince you of once or twice, but you understandably didn't believe me until you found a game that clicked, which is that like you're not allergic to that kind of gameplay. It's just that you didn't feel like it was for you on like some kind of gut level.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what I think you're saying is very typical to specifically women with an X about our age.
Right.
You know?
That, you know, it wasn't for us. It wasn't supposed to be.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was interesting that Fire Emblem was what made me finally, like I kept stealing your Switch because I was like, I want to keep doing this other playthrough. And you were like, I've done two of them already. And I was like, okay, well then give me.
So, yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah. Well, and we were on a trip and we found a really cute little Switch Lite.
Yeah.
And but that, it hadn't actually occurred to me at the time we were shopping around for it until you said it, that the Switch Lite is the first console that's been yours since the Nintendo 64.
Yeah, which is great.
And it's not because, again, it's not because like you couldn't afford it or whatever.
And I've always had games in my life.
Yeah, you just weren't that interested. Yeah. You weren't interested enough to want it to, and now you're playing, you played Disgaea 5.
I did play all
which
of
is
Disgaea 5.
A really, really good example of a super long game that the Switch has opened to new audiences, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, yeah, for sure.
So, yeah, it was like, that was my sort of re-entry gateway drug. So it was like, you know, my N64 and then, you know, I enjoyed the Wii. Like, Wii became sort of a universal, like, not gendered situation the way it was like in bars and like retirement homes.
We should talk about that actually.
Yeah, no, like it's like, you know, these phases of how video games once in a while will be like, oh, this isn't just for boys.
Well, I think so there's a really good article in Polygon that I will link to in the show notes about how the marketing of video games to boys, if not exclusively, then predominantly or specifically, is itself kind of a blip. Right. Like we think of that as being the way things were until recently, but that's not quite true. Like it certainly wasn't true before the crash.
Mm.
Like because the NES wasn't the beginning of home consoles. It was a renaissance. You know, Atari had already blown up the world, you know, and you know, copies of E.T. were getting buried in a landfill in New Mexico. And like all that shit had already happened. And not that games weren't. Not that games didn't have a gendered valence net then, and for that matter, I want to be clear, not that they don't now. I'm not saying it's a post-gender utopia out there and the girls are completely welcome in all gaming spaces, but the idea of games being generally for boys was a marketing thing that worked really well, and so the industry kind of stuck with and is still feeling haunted by it to a certain degree. The Wii was sort of an attempt to reverse course. We dug up an old clip of of Shigeru Miyamoto speaking at, I think it was GDC 2007, mm-hmm. about the wifeometer, which is a metric he internally used, which measured simply how interested was his actual wife in the game he was currently making. And the wifeometer was basically zero throughout the 8 and 16-bit eras. And he said that one of the really big turning points was the first Animal Crossing, which we've mentioned this before. Nerds, don't come at me. It was an N64 game in Japan. It didn't come out until the GameCube in the US. Okay. But there's an interesting symmetry there, right?
Yeah.
Because you're saying the N64 was your system. Mm-hmm. This was where the wifeometer began to peak.
Yeah.
And the Wii was sort of Nintendo's attempt to say, all these people who aren't playing games... what if they were?
Yeah.
You know, like, why would we as a business not want them to be? But it's there is a sense in which Animal Crossing has gendered play in it. And I mean that in a bunch of ways. I mean that it was like, as a marketing tool, it was actually like an attempt to open up who games could be for. But it's also about how you play it, right? Mm-hmm. People have described it sarcastically, but also accurately, as a game where you build a dollhouse.
Yeah, it's
a
dollhouse, yeah.
The sort of collection of stuff and the decorating and all that stuff, these are kinds of play that... I mean, like boys have always had their version of that. Like, I had the Cave of Wonders from Aladdin when I was a kid.
Like Legos.
Yeah. Well, and like Mighty Max when Polly Pocket was a thing. Mm-hmm. Right? Are these very 90s references? I'll put links in the description. But like, there's always been versions of this for boys, but it's considered, I think, mainly a feminine form of play. Mm-hmm. Right. And this game totally embraces it. And one more thing I want to make clear is I'm not saying that Animal Crossing New Horizons is a game for girls.
That's, yeah. No.
But it's welcoming. And I think it's worth noting that a lot of women about our age who have your situation where they went years and years without really playing intensely are playing the shit out of this game and playing it at a very high level, which may sound funny for some people to say because there's no Twitch challenge in it, right?
Like, right.
There's no, you don't get elite, you don't get good, but there's a lot of shit you can do in this game and get really good at that's quite complicated. The flower breeding thing is insane. And you've made yourself charts and you have like breeding zones on your island.
Yeah. And like notes, like parental lineage notes that I keep like displayed on the ground next to the flowers.
How much fun have you made of me when I'm taking notes playing complicated adventure games, and the worm has turned, let me tell you.
It's so funny. Yeah. But like, that's part of what I think is really interesting is that like, it's, you know, it's a nice thing that the game is not, you know, limited to who feels welcome to play it. But I also see a lot of very interesting, like, dialogue around it that I don't know, sometimes makes me go like,
okay.
So like,
before you say it, let me introduce into evidence that the Animal Crossing series has been near and dear to a lot of queer gamers' hearts for a long time because of the fact that it lets you do this kind of like, I mean, it lets you play dress up in a very legit way, and it does it in a pretty open-ended way.
Right.
Even in the earlier games, there were very few limitations on who could wear what.
Right.
So it's been a safe place for people to try this stuff out. Mm-hmm. Are you saying some of that has
No, okay. Not that. What I'm referring to is like people on Twitter, like the joke of like, oh, like it's so funny that all these men whose wives have yelled at them for playing too much Fallout
or whatever,
like, oh, for the first time ever, it's the wife who won't stop playing the game and the men have to be like, like, you've been playing nothing but Animal Crossing all day. And it's like,
yeah, well, those jokes are very tired. I feel like we do these jokes every couple of years like they're new. Like, that was, we did it with Candy Crush, we did it with like Brain Age or Nintendogs, with a Wii there was a bunch of that stuff.
So like, that is kind of meh.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so that brings me back to the wifeometer briefly.
Right.
Because we were talking about this earlier. The wifeometer is obviously gendered. I don't think that's a controversial thing to say. But it's also generational, right? Like, what Shigeru Miyamoto was measuring with the wife, and I know he was being cheeky. I'm not thinking he really had a chart on his wall or something. Although maybe, who knows? It was measuring like the interest level of his wife, right? A woman of Shigeru Miyamoto's, you know, generation. And I think it's important to keep that in mind that like, things are different for people about our age. Mm-hmm. I think this is quite different for people who are like, let's say 10 years younger than we are.
Oh yeah, totally.
I think there's still a relatively strong sense of like boys and girls playing different video games in the same way there are with toys in general. But I think the idea of games being a thing that boys do and if a girl does it, it's like weird and aberrant.
Is not the case for generations younger than us.
I just don't think it is.
Agreed. Yeah, I feel like in a lot of ways our generation is like the last that sort of got the full force of all of the gendered marketing stuff.
The Reagan years, man. We really wanted the 80s to be the 50s again.
Yeah.
Because I guess the point I wanted to make was it also wasn't really like that before that. I mean, like, again, not that it like tech was unwelcoming to women in the way that any industry can be unwelcoming to women. Right. But some of the greatest early games were designed by women. Mm-hmm. I think of Roberta Williams. I think mm-hmm. of Danielle Button Barry. Yeah. So like the boyification of the game yeah. space, I think that turns out to be the blip.
Yeah.
You know, like that's the departure from what
we've yeah. talked a little bit about the weird like girl computer games I played.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like Purple Moon. Remember when I was like, oh my God, I remember
what
this
company. What
triggered
that for you? We were playing something. Was it Night in the Woods?
Yep. So we were talking about how walking simulators, I was like, oh, like these remind me of the girl games I played on CD-ROM mm-hmm. on my Mac.
The fact that it's very much about just like traversal in a space and meeting characters.
And about and social interaction.
Totally.
And,
light puzzle solving, but mostly managing like emotional
yeah,
stuff.
Totally. Yeah, totally. And so I remembered this game specifically, Rocket's New School. And I was like, I'm like having weird flashbacks to Rocket's New School. And then I was like, oh my God, like whatever happened to that company? Like I remember that company, people like writing articles about like how they were going to corner the market on girls playing, you know, computer games and blah, blah, blah. And then I started like remembering the details of the game. And I was like, oh my God, this was awful. Like, this is truly terrible.
We watched some clips on YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, you know, a teen high school movie, but interactive and targeted at, like, young girls. Mm-hmm. But, like, I mean, I don't know.
I think what grossed you out was when we read some of the comments, but I can't remember her name, the creator of the series,
yeah.
talking about how like this is, we've done the research and this is what girls want
right.
to do.
Yeah.
Girls want to think about emotions. Girls don't want to think
girls
about.
Girls don't want to play games that are meant for boys. Like we can't expect, like she thought that she was breaking some code.
Yeah, it was super well-meaning. Oh, wow. I mean, maybe it was cynical marketing. Maybe it was well-meaning inclusivity. Maybe it was something in between. It's usually yeah. both in situations
right.
like this. But I think that's what grossed you out even more than the
totally.
Game.
Like yeah, well, and like when I was like remembering all of this and looking this stuff up, and you were playing, you know, a couple of walking. It was Night in the Woods, and it was there were a couple of other walking simulator types that
yeah,
you were
well,
playing
I mean,
at that time.
A while back, I replayed What Remains of Edith Finch.
That
with
one,
the, with
yeah.
the little house
and then
you're walking around in.
There was the other one.
Well, you suddenly had all these memories come flooding back of the Stanley Parable, which
oh,
is like
that
a,
one.
A,
yeah,
you know. A,
but
yeah.
but what I kept coming back to is that the fact that like even in your experience of like gamer culture, like capital G, like those are considered like quotey fingers I'm making, not real games,
right? I mean so like
yeah,
when
so
one of those
me,
shows up I was just gonna say mm-hmm. when one of those shows up there's a certain contingent of boring people who become very angry about them.
Right.
Dear Esther was a really big one
yeah.
way back when. Gone Home is maybe one you're thinking
oh that's
of.
One
yeah
yeah
yeah,
yeah
yeah
yeah that's exactly the one I was thinking
yeah
of.
There's
yeah.
there's a lot of weird salt about right. about
that
and
know. So for me it was like oh how interesting that these games that most closely resemble what was grossly marketed at me as a little girl are the same features of what like capital G gamers still say are quote unquote not real games.
Yeah.
That to me was like, oh my God, like that's so weird that it stayed.
Totally. Well, so not to have the wifeometer completely be our skeleton key, but Miyamoto said that one of the things that got his wife interested in Animal Crossing was when he promised there were no enemies to fight, right?
Yeah.
And I ran into somebody in the Twitter sphere not too long ago who was talking about how like radically nonviolent Animal mm-hmm. Crossing is. And on the one hand, yeah, for sure. But it's like, on the other hand, this is the sixth Animal Crossing. You know what I mean? Like, if you have never seen anything like Animal Crossing, fair enough. I envy that you get to get your mind blown right now. But it also means, as a practical matter, there are a lot of really interesting games that means you haven't played, right? Mm-hmm. There's a whole bunch of maybe off-canon or not considered the big tentpole releases kinds of games that have been playing in this space for a long, long time. You know, mm-hmm. the idea of violence having to be baked in is super interesting in games, you know, mm-hmm. and probably has it goes from the beginning. I can't remember who said it, but someone's theory is just that it's like the reason there's so many shooters in games is just it's such an easy feedback loop. You point a reticle at something and mm-hmm. then it explodes.
Yeah.
Like it's so little input to so much output.
I think for me,
know?
Too, the other big difference is not just violence, but also real time elements.
The Twitch stuff, yeah.
Yep,
execution
exactly.
challenges.
That, because I think that for especially of my generation, girls like me who weren't you know, playing first player on Mario, but were allowed to play, you know, NBA Jams as second player
for
once
households
in a while.
With Genesis, if you were Tails.
Yeah,
in,
no, exactly.
Sonic 2, yeah.
Then your skills were never as honed because it mm-hmm. wasn't your everyday thing. And so I've grown up always like, oh, I can play fighting games, but only because I can button mash. And like, mm-hmm. I'm really bad at like platformers. I'm terrible at them. And I hate being bad at things. This is a running thing with me. I don't do things I'm not
you're naturally good at.
You're
naturally good at enough things that you're able to just avoid things you're not naturally good at.
I don't like
at.
Having to work at things and get right. better at things. It's not my favorite. So I just don't play those games.
And also, I should say that there's a whole school of game where any of us have to bang our heads against it. Like, you're never going to be probably that into the From Software games.
Nope.
Because you
sure won't.
Because I have to bang my head against a wall.
Yes.
But you would have to, like, even just to get to the level to begin banging your head against a wall, because you don't have the same background in 3D action games.
Yeah.
You have to, like, take a class at the Learning Annex
right,
or whatever. You're just not going to do it.
Right. So I think that that's also part of why, like, the Animal Crossing feels so welcoming and open, is that, like, there are no high stakes real time ever. And what's funny is that, like, I've got friends that are playing this who this is like genuinely their very first video game. Mostly, again, women of my age. Mm-hmm. And most of my friends are actor types because that's my life. Wow, that sounded so mean. I love you, my friends who are actors. But, you know, this is not generally something they've spent a lot of time on in their lives. And because of the weird world we live in right now, where, you know, you can't go outside and do things, and because actors, especially right now, are by definition out of work, because theaters are probably going to be one of the last places to open back up as we figure out what COVID is. So all these actors are out of work and bored and like stressed and completely, for the first time in their adult lives, have no control over anything in their lives. And all of a sudden this game presents itself that is so gentle and so kind and calming and about seeing friends and connecting with people. And so it's been really funny that I have so many friends who this is their first game that they're playing and they're so obsessed with it. But then they like get self-conscious when they come over and like visit my island and they're like, wait, like, hold on. It's going to take me a minute to get my ladder out. I'm so bad at this. Like with the actual mechanics of it, even that they get self-conscious about, like, it's just not a skill they have. Like they have to look down at the controls and see what they're doing. Like, so it's interesting to watch them work through that because the game is welcoming enough.
Yeah. Because this problem is self-similar when you get to twitchier games. Again,
totally.
like some like Demon's Souls is very bad at onboarding you.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Dark Souls 3 or even Sekiro to a certain degree is much better at it, right? So like those are games that if you don't have those Twitch skills, they're basically inaccessible to you, which is its own problem. And that's
right.
a whole other topic of like,
can
you do
it? Yeah.
And there are games that try to bridge that gap completely, like Celeste, right?
Mm-hmm.
Celeste is a very, very hard platformer, but you can slow down time. You can make yourself invincible. There are all these affordances for mm-hmm. people for whom this is the first time they've attempted, or maybe the only time they're gonna attempt something like that. It's really interesting to see that on something as basic as moving a character around a screen.
Totally.
Right? And I say basic because it's basic unit of so many
games.
I don't mean that in a pejorative way, right?
So one of my closest friends, who I don't get to see a lot because she lives in Chicago, and
you don't get to see her a lot even if the world's not shut down.
Exactly. And her birthday is at the end of April. And her wonderful husband got her own little Switch Lite and her own copy of Animal Crossing. And it's literally the first time she's ever played a video game. And it was hilarious. The first time I went over to visit her island, she was like, oh my God, you're so fast. How do you get around so fast? I'm like, you can hold B and then you can run. And she was like, what the fuck?
Yeah, she pierced the veil. She like saw through
her
mind.
Yeah, yeah. And so it was like, you know, there are people that, you know, have never touched a video game who are completely enamored all of a sudden by this wonderful thing that has come into the world at exactly the right time.
So the timing of, okay, are you familiar with the Bartle taxonomy of player psychology?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
So this is a way of thinking about the ways that different people play games, especially different people playing the same game.
Okay.
It gets talked about a lot in the context of MMOs. So there are basically four player types, and you don't have to be just one. This is not a BuzzFeed quiz. You can be like a little bit of one, a little bit of the other, you know, sun, moon, whatever.
Okay.
But they are socializer, Okay. Explorer, achiever, killer. So killer doesn't really apply to single player games because it's specifically about like getting a rise out of competition and winning. Okay. There's a little bit of that in Animal Crossing. If you look at some people getting catty about flowers on Twitter or just, you know, pitfall seeds, whatever. But basically the others are interesting ways of thinking about how you play in every game. So an achiever would be someone who wants to pay off the loans as quickly as possible. An explorer would be someone who wants to collect one of every flower or go to as many Nook Islands as they can or meet every villager, which is actually probably nearly impossible. But anyway, you know, want to do that. Socializer wants to play with people, right? I think what's really interesting about Animal Crossing is it serves the other three, not the killer lane, so well, where so many games focus so much on competition, which not that there's anything wrong with competitive games inherently.
Well, and what I think that I've tried to explain to people who aren't playing Animal Crossing, who are like, what the fuck is this and why are people so obsessed with it? Explain, please. Like, my brother sent me a message the other day that was a story about Danny Trejo being on a talk show in Animal Crossing, and my brother just literally sent the link and said, explain, please.
Right. We should explain, like, Animal Crossing is one of those games... Okay, let's take a step back. Fortnite has become a platform. I don't know if you've heard, like, people do DJ sets in it and stuff, right?
Oh, God.
Animal Crossing is weirdly similar, but it's all pretty organic. Nintendo has not organized this stuff
No, people have just done it. Yeah.
Gary Whitta, who's a writer, you may know him from Rogue One or about a bajillion other things, has started a talk show inside of Animal Crossing. Right. It is called Animal Talking. And he had Danny Trejo on. And
he
that,
had T-Pain, like a big, big star.
Tim Schafer was on.
Elijah Woods.
Elijah Wood was on the same episode as Danny Trejo. It's crazy. So that's happening inside the game. There are all these other kinds of culture that I, as a giant nerd, am interested in and talk about on this podcast, sneak in, but that are intersecting. The Getty put a bunch of their artwork in like weird 32 by 32 form that you can download. The Monterey Bay Aquarium, is that who it was doing a real aquarium tour of the in-game aquarium?
And then there was some like colonial era reenactment place in, I think, like one of the Virginias or something.
I think that's right.
That like built an entire thing on an island
made
and
costumes
like made
with
costumes
textures.
With custom yeah, exactly. And they like had like hours that kids could come visit the same way that they would if they were going on a field trip. Like and sort of where we've come full circle is that there is maybe the nichiest, is that a word? Like,
yeah, it is now.
Great, cool. Nichiest nerd Facebook group ever called Broadway Gamers. That is where the tiny Venn diagram of professional theater people and gamers collide.
This is people who've played in pits of shows you've heard of if you're into Broadway talking about JRPGs and stuff.
Right. So it's a very specific little
and
subset.
Actors. I don't mean that it's just
No.
It's everybody.
But it's directors, it's playwrights, it's
everybody.
Yeah, everybody. Anyone who works in a professional theater who also plays video games.
Which I should say is also a generational thing, right? I
mean, totally.
Like if you look at the for lack of a better term, the boomer reaction to like AOC showing up in Animal Crossing, or for that matter,
yeah,
showing
like,
up on
fuck?
H Bomber
yeah,
Guy's Donkey Kong stream. Well, there's a thought of like, she's goofing off, which is a very different reaction than seeing the president, oh, I don't know, play golf all the time, right? it's generational, right? In the same way that boomers grew up watching TV and weren't going to stop watching TV when they became adults, ours is the first generation that has completely
games,
grown up with games. Yeah, I guess Gen X, kind of, right? But it's different.
So it's been funny. One of the things that, like, I guess it was inevitable is that finally someone has started building, like, they built like a little area of their island that's a community theater, and they're like collecting items so that they can build sets. Like the first one they built is they're going to try to do like some kind of little reenactment of Waitress. So they've got like their whole diner set out. The little diner outfit. We're like sort of toying around with, you know, what would it look like to put on an actual play or an actual musical.
So it's like I feel like every couple of years some game comes along where stuff happens inside the game. I mean, Second Life. Right, I remember really late in his life, Kurt Vonnegut did an interview in Second Life,
really?
Like with his little avatar. Yeah, That kind of stuff happens. Obviously, you know, in the past 10 years, it's mostly been Minecraft. So much mm-hmm. stuff goes on in Minecraft. In fact, right now, you know, when I was talking to the Bumble Bear gents about how to support your local arcade, Wonderville, the really wonderful arcade in New York, is doing this thing. What do they call it? The Wonderverse or something? They have like a Minecraft space you can That's hang cool. out in and listen to DJ sets and whatever, right?
Well, and like there's been, again, like museums and stuff have done whole areas of Minecraft. The one that blew my mind was the one where you could enter a model of the human eye.
Oh, yeah.
It was crazy.
Yeah, they made a bunch of the educational maps yeah. free a while ago, and one of them was, yeah, it was just a Minecraft map of an eye, and it had like labels explaining what was happening, so and here's crazy. How light enters, yeah. and just like there's all kinds of cool stuff like that. Animal Crossing has become a platform for right. that kind of stuff. I mean, second,
but it was never intended to be. That's what makes it so interesting,
right? It was always meant to be, you know, an avenue for player creativity. The custom right. texture thing was yeah. in New Leaf as well, and in fact, you can import your custom textures from New Leaf to New Horizons and all that. But it's, I guess, what I find interesting is it's the intersection, like Minecraft, of that sort of pure creative platform thing where mm-hmm. you can do stuff like put on a production yeah. of Waitress or whatever. But it also is a game, like especially the first couple of in-game weeks of Animal Crossing
oh, yeah,
are pretty gamey. Like there's yeah, daily yeah. objectives right. and, you know, all of that
and
kind of
skill
stuff.
Acquires.
Right,
and,
right. Where, you know, yeah. Minecraft is like that at this point. I guess there's like there's leveling and all that stuff.
There?
But they've added it slowly and, you know, notably, a lot of kids I know don't play that way. They don't fuck with survival mode. They just play creative mode, you know?
Right. That's not the point to them.
Right, yeah. right. So, I mean, I guess that's the other thing about Animal Crossing is it invites you, like it guides you. It's a good balance between it giving you set goals. Mm-hmm. So you're not like awash. And
right. Or else I don't think I would enjoy it. And the fact that like, I've always known that that's part of what will turn me off to playing a game is that like, if I don't have a set goal, I immediately get bored.
You actually need like a linear campaign, yeah. even if it's sprawling. Because that's the thing about right. Fire Emblem. It's huge.
Yes.
But like, or Persona even, time mm-hmm. marches inexorably forward. So like you Correct. Have choices to make, but about what to do with a limited span of time
yeah, yeah.
before things move on.
Right.
Right. That's very different from an open world game.
Right.
You know, like you didn't take the controls when we played the Nier games, for example.
No, which know? I enjoyed.
Yeah.
Like I think they're beautiful pieces of work.
You can say art. It's fine.
Yeah,
you can use the A word.
I do. I think they yeah. are.
I mean, so I, you know, the A word is not good or bad, I think, right
yeah,
here.
No,
I think
no.
I think if you can't say stuff like bad art or boring art, then the word is useless. Like,
right.
yeah, yeah. So yeah, no, totally. They're beautiful works of art.
Well, that's the way yeah. that I talk about, like, there's, you know, a novel and a musical and a game are all a work. They are all
right.
an
text.
Artistic piece.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, like I enjoy a game even if I don't touch a control, I can still enjoy it as a piece of art.
Yeah, and I think even gamers, I'm just gonna say it like that from now on, know that because they will, you know, you watch speedruns. I mean, like that's a
yeah.
way to experience a game.
I mean, and the fact that Twitch even exists.
Yeah, totally. Twitch.
That's been a fun thing to try to explain to older generations. They're like, but wait, what? So like, my stepdad, one of his grandkids is, shall we say, an indoor kid. And my stepfather is the opposite of an indoor kid. And he is kind of struggling, like figuring out how to relate to his grandchild, who he loves dearly. And he desperately wants to be able to, you know, spend more quality time with him and, you know, understand, you know, where he's coming from and stuff. Because most of the people in his life, he can take fishing and they're like, cool. And this kid just doesn't want and he's not going
to
force.
Like you and I are not stoked to go fishing,
yeah,
but
we'll go
fishing.
Right. But,
I feel like
but this
he
kid, he's like,
yeah.
well, and he's a kid. Like you're not going to force him to go do stuff he doesn't want
right.
to do if you're a decent parent.
Your stepdad's attitude also reminds me a little bit of that thing Terry Crews said. Did you ever hear him say this? Where like he got super into gaming because his son was into
right.
it and he wanted to do what his dad never did, which mm-hmm. is take an interest in the thing
exactly.
that the son was interested in.
Right.
Like that's great.
So my stepdad, who's, you know, pushing 70 at this point, especially because like normally he can go visit his grandkids and like spend time with them, and that's, you know, one way of making sure he's staying connected with them, but again, in light of all the craziness in the world right now, that's not an option. And like he can FaceTime them, but yeah, you know, it's just not quite the same. And so he sent us an email where he was like, help, help me, Mr. Wizard, which is how he writes any email.
Most
to
of
us.
His emails do have that subject line. That's true, regardless of the topic.
Yeah, but anytime he's emailing us, it's usually because he needs tech help. So it's always help me, Mr. Wizard.
And this was still kind of that.
Yeah, because he was saying, like, how can I play games with my grandson remotely? And so we spent an hour or two on the phone with them talking about, like, okay, so, like, what is the game that he's playing? Like, I'm pretty sure you've mentioned Minecraft. Like, have you played with him before? Have you tried, like, what kind of controller do we need to get you? And, like, it was so fun.
I spent an evening plugging every controller I own into my MacBook to see which would just work, because I didn't want to make him download a bunch of bullshit.
But the fact that, like, he's really trying, and, like, the fact that he, you know, at first was kind of flummoxed, not frustrated, but just like, what is happening in this child's life?
It seemed like an unbridgeable divide. Yeah,
and he was like, I thought the first time that he figured out that the kid wasn't always just playing games, but was watching on Twitch a lot. Like, he watches a lot of streamers. The kid is, he's got a lot of streaming, you know, people that he really closely follows.
Yeah.
And that was a weird thing for my stepdad to begin to understand. He was like, so hold on, like, all the times I think he's playing games, he's not even necessarily playing, like, he's just watching someone play. And it's like, well, yeah, that's a thing that exists and is a form of entertainment that is valid.
I think he grokked it when he, you know, it's like sports, right?
Exactly.
You watch sports and you play sports and you don't necessarily play at a professional level.
Totally.
I mean, he maybe does, but
right.
But like, but you do both, right? Like, that's a completely normal thing for someone who plays basketball to also watch basketball.
Right.
Why should Minecraft fundamentally be different? Right.
Yeah.
Because part of it is that exact same thing of wanting to watch someone do a thing you like, but do it better than you can do it.
Totally.
Some of it is personality based, and that's a fraught topic we'll get into some other day. Is, you know, streamers being, it's both good and bad that those are, you know, parasocially linked to kids and whatever. But the point being, your stepdad made an effort. And I think he ended up getting a DualShock controller. So he's got like he doesn't have a PlayStation, but he has a PlayStation controller, and he's going to play Minecraft, and it's delightful.
Yeah.
It's delightful. I mean, and that's another good example of how, like, intergenerational play is a thing that,
totally.
You know, I mean, that was something that Wii really did make happen, right? Like
having your
grandparent play Wii bowling or something.
Yeah.
That was a very real phenomenon at house parties
and
family gatherings and what have you. I feel like Animal Crossing is, I don't know if it's doing quite as much of that intergenerational stuff, because that's one thing I did want to talk about. Everybody we play it with is roughly our age. Like, I know there are a bunch, but I don't personally know a single kid playing Animal Crossing.
I mean, that's interesting.
Again, obviously, I know for sure they exist.
Yeah.
But it's like,
well,
most
also,
of,
like, to be fair, we don't know that many kids.
Well, I mean, we got nieces and nephews. And,
I know,
and most
so.
Of them, I mean, I have, you know, I have Minecraft dates with Haley, who we've talked about on this podcast a bunch, but she mostly wants to play Minecraft. And to be fair, part of that with her is accessibility, right?
Right.
Like
totally.
Animal Crossing is a less accessible game, and then one she's just less used to than
right.
Minecraft. But it's interesting to me.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting to me that it can be exactly what it's supposed to be and be a fantasy space for kids while also making room for all these weird adults to use it as a social space. That it can be all things to all people like that and continue to blow up our timeline, like a month more than that after release?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
And it's got more to do, I think, with than just the timing, although the timing has a lot to do with
it. No, but the fact that, like, every software update is a new headline, like, that's crazy this far in, like, the fact
that it stays
the top of the headlines.
There are lots of games that are like that. You've just never given a shit before about what's in the next patch.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Like, but I'm always, like, peripherally aware of them. Like, anytime, you know, Jim Sterling does a video about, like, this update fucked up these things. Like, you know, I'm aware of the headlines when they come out.
But your Google News feed knows you want to know about every Animal Crossing New Horizons patch. You know, like, you want to know that we're going to get to meet the llamas. It's gonna be great. You're engaged in the discourse.
I'm in the discourse.
And again, like, if you're a company that sells games, this is your dream. You want everyone in the world to care about the thing you're making and to log into it every day. And New Horizons does have some of that, like, very basic, almost crass, like, daily challenge kind of stuff, but it's so low-key, and the rewards stop mattering at a certain point.
Yeah.
Like, I find that to be a really interesting curve. When you're starting, you kind of really need those Nook Miles every day, if you want to progress quickly anyway.
Yeah.
At this point, if I miss, I don't even look at my dailies. Like, I do some of them without thinking about it. I maybe look at the times 5 one and figure out what that is. But I just kind of play the game at my own pace. Like, I've still, don't get me wrong, I still play a lot. I've logged in every day since it came out.
Yeah.
I think you play more than I do.
I do. This, what's been really interesting for me is that, you know, having lived with you for long enough and knowing how you operate just even in the real world, and then watching how you play games and, you know.
I'm very scared of how the sentence is going to end, but please continue.
Shall we say the way in which you like to complete things?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Great.
We should say I am not a strict completionist in games.
No, right? But that's my point, is that you're not a full-blown completionist, but I feel like a different version, like an alternate reality version of you, is.
Well, and younger me kind of was.
Yeah, exactly.
I played fewer games, but I played them to absolute completion. Right. And that was partially, like, I want to be very clear. I'm not saying I grew up poor or whatever, but I'm saying that, like, I couldn't buy a game a week or something. Totally. Games were expensive, especially in those old days, you know, whatever, inflation, Clinton dollars, whatever. But making a game last
totally
was intentional. You would get a game, you would fall in love with it, and you would play every inch of it. As an adult with, with $5 indie games that can occupy me forever, I don't have to do that as much or whatever.
Yeah. But you do still sometimes have the impulse where you, like, for example, with Celeste, where you were like, oh, fuck, these, like, seasides and strawberries and all of this stuff. And it was, like, a thing for you to have to decide that maybe you didn't need to
beat every seaside necessarily.
Yeah, exactly. And watching you have those moments of choice as you play most games that you play, where, like, sometimes you're like, ah, do I have to go back and save scum that because I can't live with the fact that I didn't do that thing right, or that I had, like, and the fact that in Animal Crossing you're like, fuck fishing, like,
is
so interesting to me, that you, who I consider like kind of a completionist and kind of, you know, maybe a little compulsive about some things about the way you play games. I
really know what you're talking about there.
That I can be more like, where I'm like, I can't believe you haven't caught the new fish for May. Like, May's almost over.
Right.
Like, you better catch those fucking fish.
You know what part of it
is? And you're like, no, I don't care.
I probably would be screwed. And want to catch all the May fish, but I missed that one April fish.
I also missed the April fish.
So at that point, I lost all motivation to try and complete the Fishipedia or whatever.
Okay, so this is where you're like me, where, like, if I'm going to be bad at something, I don't fuck with it.
It's not about bad at it, though.
No, but it's but it's the same thing, like, where, like, at a certain point, it's like, nope, that's done. Like, it's over. And it doesn't take much.
So it's like, for me, those decision points, which I think have been part of playing a game healthily, and I'm going to make a confession I maybe have never made on this podcast before. Sometimes, if I'm really having a not fun time with a game, I'll turn it down to easy at this point. And that would have been sacrilege to a previous version of me. But it's like, I don't owe this game 20 attempts at this battle I get it, right?
So, and, like, you've gotten better at, like, sometimes I have to tell you you're not having fun.
That is true.
But most of the time, you can figure that out for yourself now. And, like, there are games that you simply don't enjoy playing that you still want to play for other reasons than just them being enjoyable in the actual action. Act of playing.
Some of them are interesting works of art. Some of them do cool stuff with the form, whatever. There are lots of reasons to...
You've gone back to play old games that you know are broken in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Well, so this is a good example of the choosing when to walk away thing, totally. Right? So I went back to play... We played Nier Automata. We loved it. We played Nier. It was busted as shit, but we loved it.
Right.
Went back to play Drakengard 3. It's a rough ride.
Yeah. And at a certain point, it was not worth it.
It does the thing that Yoko Taro's games do, where to get to the last branch and see the light, see the true ending. Pro ZD voice. you have to collect every weapon in the game.
Yeah.
And it was, like, physically painful, but I was like, you know, I think maybe I'm just not going to do that.
Yeah.
You know?
And I was very proud of you for that.
Yeah. I mean, to be totally...
And so what's funny for me to be at Animal Crossing is that, like, I'm the one for the first time is like, I can't believe you're not...
Yeah, no, you don't even understand how I could possibly make the conscious choice to not care about the Fishipedia. I'm still going to fill out my Bugapedia. As of this morning, I have every fossil.
I know that happens. That's exciting. It's very exciting. Yeah. I'm very jealous, actually.
I'm being selective. Because it's a game where there are so many things to do, I'm never going to do everything. You know what I mean?
Whereas, like, I'm being crazy with my flowers.
Yeah, exactly.
And, like, you're not going to do that, and that makes sense.
I don't need every color of every flower, but you do, and that's a totally legit goal. I want to have every fossil.
Well, I need every color of every flower, I need to know that I can create
flower. Someone, like, giving you a blue rose is not sufficient.
Yeah. Like, fine, I put it on display in my botanical garden area where I have, but, like, but I still have to be able to breed one.
This is the thing that I think a game like Animal Crossing can be so good at, though, is making you think about what you want from a game, right? Totally. I mean, we brought up Nier, so like that's why those games sometimes, spoiler alert, ask you to delete your save at the end, because they're like, what do you want out of this game that you haven't got out of this game? They want you to think about it.
I don't know if you saw this, but I read something about how for the first time, people who are like, you know, major Animal Crossing devotees are having like major FOMO about their islands.
Yeah. They miss the old days, right?
In no small part because it is such a sort of like phenomenon this time around. And because we are in this COVID place where everyone, like where your island has become the way you present yourself in a very weird way. Cause like you're not going to meet your friends in real life. Like what clothes you're wearing or makeup or how you wear your hair. Like that's not how you're presenting yourself right now. Like your island in a lot of ways is sometimes the main way in which you are presenting yourself.
That
to
is your
online friends.
Self. Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and so people are getting stressed about like, oh, my island's not good enough. Or like, I don't have enough this or that. And you know, so there've been some people who have like chosen to erase their saves and start over. Like now that we're what, 2 months in?
About
a month?
That, yeah.
Time has no meaning.
Yeah, I mean time is all wobbly anyway.
But I was reading about these players who wanted to go back and just like because everyone started at the same time and like everyone has progressed sort of on the same cycle.
Oh, that's interesting. So for them, the idea that they are not in a race with
Correct.
The people with the nicest islands
Correct.
Is a great relief.
Yes. And to start over and to remember the fact that like, oh, I can go a whole day with where I don't even have an axe yet. And that's okay. And like, I can just collect fruit and sticks and go to bed in my tent and be perfectly happy.
Yeah, that's so interesting to me because like it has literally never occurred to me to play this game that way. But I've done Dark Souls playthroughs where I'm not allowed to equip pants. You know what I mean? Like it's, I understand the impulse.
Yeah, no, and that's exactly the thing is that these, you know, players who've started over are like, you know, I don't know that I need to, you know, play the game to the point where I even have a full capacity of, you know, neighbors. Maybe I just like,
yeah, there was, I think it was Nathan Grayson. Some writer was writing about how when his snob, villager showed up in the tent, it was just, he hated him. And if you don't accept your first snob villager, the progression just stops. You can't continue.
Really?
You can never get KK Slider to come. So you can never get terraforming. Cause I guess that's the other thing. I think I read one of the FOMO articles about the people hitting reset. The terraforming stuff is just like,
it stressed
overwhelming.
Them out. Yeah. Where they were like,
too many options.
Yeah.
Because this one is much more, especially by the end, the chips don't fall where they may. You can decide who
Everything.
Lives where
and
all that stuff. So yeah, like I guess he was playing it wrong because he was stuck on like day 6 or something and never going to get further. And it was kind of weirdly chill and cool.
Yeah, totally. I believe it.
And I mean, it's a game that makes space for that. It's not going to, it doesn't admonish you for being stuck at that. Like if you ask Tom Nook what you should do next, he'll tell you what to do next, but that's it.
What's interesting is that we keep talking about how full our inventories are and how we want to do a stream that's a Marie Kondo of our inventories to get rid of stuff.
It might be a necessity.
I know. But but what's so interesting is that like in real life, we do tend to be pretty good about not accumulating a whole lot of stuff. We lived in Manhattan in less than 500 square feet with two, you know, full size humans and two full size dogs.
And plants.
I'm a plant lady. In case the flower talk hadn't affirmed that.
This is flower talk.
and we lived in this tiny little studio and we did not have a storage unit. We did not still have anything at parents' homes. Like everything we owned in the world fit in less than 500 square feet. And it kept us really honest and it kept us really good at acknowledging like, no, that is a thing I don't need. So I should not buy it because I don't need it. I'm not going to use it. Like maybe I don't need to purchase it. And so what's interesting is that, you know, that's something I've tried to stay good at, even though we now live in a much larger home.
And we've bought some stuff.
And we've bought
but
some stuff
because thing,
we
right?
live in
we're
a larger home and
we're conscious about
but what's
getting stuff
funny
we want.
Is that in the game, I find that I'm like, oh, I still have all this shit in my inventory that I know I'm never going to, like, why, and coming back around to gender stuff, I realized that I was never dressing my avatar in dresses or skirts.
Mm.
And I was like, huh, I've held on to all these and I'm literally never going to use them. Like, the dresses I'll give to my neighbors because I think they're cute and I want to see my neighbors wear the dresses.
But a villager, if you haven't played the game, won't wear a skirt.
Exactly. They can't wear a skirt. And so I literally one day was like, I'm just going to sell every skirt I own. And it felt weirdly liberating. And I was go figure.
We for those who remember and those who don't, I did a Marie Kondo style tidying stream for my Destiny 2 inventory a while back. I'll link to it in the show notes. We are strongly considering doing a joint one for because my inventory is completely full too.
Every day is Horizon. A juggle, yeah.
Every day is a struggle, and there's oranges all over my floor.
Struggle and a juggle. Yeah.
And struggle, yeah. So yeah, I mean, you know, say something in the comments or on Twitter if that sounds like a weirdly satisfying thing to watch, because we're probably going to do it either
whether
way,
or not.
But we should stream it. We should just do it. We should set a time.
Sure.
I'll say when that is in the notes or something. Cool. What else do we have to say about Animal Crossing? Have we covered it?
I think that, you know, coming back to how you choose to present in the game is relevant. And I think that for us especially, I think that anyone who knows us knows that we sort of generally describe ourselves as being the queerest straight couple ever. For a lot of reasons. But, you know, again, like being elder millennials, we're sort of on that weird cusp of like when we were in high school, like, being gay was fine. Like, you could be openly gay when we were in high school and it was cool.
At least in Los Angeles.
At least in Los Angeles.
In a music magnet
school. Okay. Yeah. We went to high school together. I'm sorry.
We're both sorry.
Take a moment to, you know, collect your gagging. But like, our high school had a gay straight alliance and those were your options. Like, either you were gay or you were straight and that was it.
Yeah. Like, out gay kids in high school would say with no irony, well, you're aware bisexuality doesn't exist, right?
Yeah, like, totally.
There were still weird, I mean, it was obviously a thing, but it was like there were weird prejudices in the way people talked about it.
Yeah, and gender was still a binary. And like, I think we've both talked a lot about how like, God, like if we were 20 years younger and we had
some of these words.
Yeah,
that we have
like just
now,
the language, like the nuance of the language and understanding that kids are able to have younger and younger about how their gender and their sexuality don't have to exist on any kind of binaries is amazing. And I think that there's a part of both of us that feels like maybe we missed the boat on those, because like it's like meh at this point. Like,
I maybe a little.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And so it's been fun that in this game, like you said, like there's nothing, like when you're designing your character, like there's nothing about it that's gendered. Like you choose a haircut and you choose a hair color and everyone.
The male, female presenting thing is just called like your look, is it? There's like it.
I don't even think it's that. Like
you choose one or the other, but it doesn't call it gender. Like there's.
Interesting. Yeah. But like, yeah, you do like. Everyone's haircuts are available to everybody and
totally,
everyone can wear every clothes and whatever. But yeah, like when I noticed, I was like, oh, like my instinct and like everything that I just want to put on clothing wise in the game is like none of them have been like the typically feminine stuff.
Yeah, no, I totally wear more dresses in Animal Crossing than you do.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that, you know, that's not irrelevant to the discussion.
Well, so I guess, yeah, the thing that I go back and forth on, I guess, is like, is it that you and I are something other than straight cis people and we just didn't have the language and so we like didn't figure it out, in which case it's not too late to figure it out. Or is it that we are straight cis people and just like gender expression needs to open up? That's like when I would ask myself when I was younger and when I still do, like, am I something other than that? I don't know if I'm being honest with myself about the answer being, I'm just a weird version of what I am, or if what I'm thinking is, it's more useful for me to be that.
Yeah.
For straight cis masculinity to include whatever the fuck I'm doing is, it seems to me, like, socially productive. But that's not the right way to ask a question about yourself, necessarily.
Yeah, yeah,
so
totally.
It's complicated. And I feel like people, you know, kids now get to grow up.
Yeah.
Not that it's not complicated, but they have a little bit less of the specific bullshit we dealt with to deal with.
Yeah. Well, and like in my job as an actor, I work with kids. Like there's a lot of shows I've done where I have coworkers who are, you know, anywhere between the age of 18 and 8, you know? And it's been weirdly affirming and wonderful to like sometimes get to know them and watch them interact with each other and realize that like they really just don't give a fuck about binaries. They really don't. Like, and I don't know if it's just because these are like weird like actor kids, like artist
maybe
kids
ahead of the curve.
Who also like some of them don't even go to like regular school because they're working actors. But yeah, like I've just watched them, the way they interact with each other and the way they talk about, you know, like sometimes there's a littler kid asking an older kid like, oh, do you have a boyfriend? And she's like, why do you assume I have a boyfriend? And she's like, well, do you have a girlfriend? She's like, why do we have to have labels? Like, why do we have to have that? Like, why can't I just love somebody? And the little kid's like, yeah, that's fair. Like, and I'm like, holy shit, like, that's amazing. And it's just really cool to think that, you know, the way in which we're getting to just like kind of fuck around and have fun presenting as whatever we feel like in this game is the way that those kids get to be in real life.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it's like you and I are relatively lucky in that we can do that in real life a little
bit.
Yeah,
you know,
totally. we have a job situation and a living situation that's stable enough that we can sort of do that.
Well, and we live in a place that it's socially acceptable. And,
But it's like, I hear you, like building that into play for everybody,
is
old,
awesome.
Young, whatever,
yeah.
is a really beautiful thing. And that is something that I think Animal Crossing has always been a bit ahead of the curve on.
Right, exactly. Like
and
you
this
were talking
one,
about.
This one is even, I mean, like there was a piece a while ago about how the skin tone thing is a
yeah,
lot better in this one than in the previous
really
games. It's good. It's just good.
It is just good. It's a good, happy thing that we need in the world right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. And we could really use more of that.
Yeah.
In the world.
The world needs that right now.
Yeah.
Real bad.
Also, there's a pretty satirically on point representation of the stock market in the game for your escapism.
Yes. Yes, there is. In fact, my same friend in Chicago, who this is the very first video game she's ever played, I was talking to her. She was like, I'm so mad at how punny that is, that it's Sow Jones. She was like, how dare.
Yeah.
She's a pun person. She's a punny.
She's the most accomplished
she's
punstress.
Maybe the most
I've
punster
ever met.
Punner ever. And so for her, that was like, oh, how dare they.
No, she was so mad she hadn't somehow
so
gotten
mad.
There first.
She was like, oh, the stalk market. Sow Jones. She was so mad.
Well, I should probably let you start playing Animal Crossing.
Yeah,
again.
I know. I literally have my Switch Lite right here. I'm like,
she asked, can I play Animal Crossing
while
we talk about
Animal Crossing?
And I said, I would like your undivided attention. So thank you for giving it to me. But you can now.
I have a rainy day right now that I'm wasting. I could
no,
be fishing right now.
You'd rather be fishing. You know what? We're going to get, if you, let's actually turn that down and we're going to get like copyright striked.
That was just the like opening like bell. Come on.
It was. This, well, I mean, I'm glad that this came up because I should say we've been praising this game Nintendo made and it is great. That doesn't mean that everything Nintendo does is wonderful and the way that they treat fan games in particular and the way they're super litigious is
not
super
always
good,
great,
right?
Yeah.
Both can be true. And in fact,
yes.
Both are true.
Yeah.
So anyway, thanks for doing this.
Yeah. It's fun to finally talk instead of just listening to you talk to cool people.
You're gonna hate when I have to edit this.
Yeah, no,
and you're
I'm
gonna
really,
have to listen to yourself.
Yeah. As someone who does voice acting, listening to my own voice is really painful, which is, I know, stupid, but here we are.
As Lucia would say, welcome to Bone Hell. So anyway, thanks for listening, everybody. We know this was a different one this week. Thanks for rolling with it. Let me know what you thought. We'll be back with a guest next time.
I can't believe I'm not a guest.
But you're so much more than a guest. You want to be a guest? You want to be kept at arm's length in that way? You don't want to be welcomed on a permanent basis? Okay, thanks to our guests. Lauren Villegas, the Everybody's Talking at Once podcast is hosted and produced by me, Drew Messenger Michaels, with support aplenty from Francis Michelle Lopez and Lucio Valentino. Our logo is by Aaron Perry Zucker using icons from the Noun Project. You can find us everywhere podcasts are a thing. And thank you very much to all of our patrons who make it possible for us to keep on keeping on. If you would like the show a day early and to get a bunch of little bonus, you know, content-y objects, then you can become a patron at patreon.com/ETAO. Do, of course, only do that if you can afford to in these crazy times. You can find the podcast at etaopod.com, in addition to all those podcast aggregators I alluded to a moment ago. And you can find all of our writing as well at etao.blog. Thanks again for being a guest on the show.
Thank you.
It's been very nice having you.
Thanks.
Oh, and hey, by the way, while we were editing, we decided that we are, in fact, going to do the tidying stream on Wednesday, May 27th. If you're listening to this the day it goes live, that's tomorrow. If you're listening to it, the next day is today. If it's later than that, we'll have some kind of archive, but if you do want to tune in live, we, I think, will be able to simul stream on Twitch and Mixer and YouTube and all of the stream things. So tune in if you want to see us divest ourselves of some virtual Animal Crossing possessions. Either way, see you next time, everybody.